So Olivet Discourse. Jesus is coming back. That's the end of that. Shall we move on?
Sure, why not?
Remember now, the critical issue here for interpreting anything in the Bible has to do with approach the text with as little to few as possible presuppositional baggage, because that's what gets us off track every time. Remember, 28 different times in the 13th chapter of Mark, Mark's version of the Olivet Discourse, Christ refers to all of you. And who is the all of you? Well, Peter, James, John, and Andrew, right? Mark says that those are the four guys that went up on the hill. Why did they go up the hill with them, with Jesus? Not to fetch a bucket of water, but they went up the hill because Jesus just said, you see all these stones? You see this temple? Not one left standing upon another. It's all going down. And they knew what that meant, and it was like, what? This is Judaism. The temple was Judaism. It had become such an idol to these people. But all that was encased therein, all the ceremonialism, everything that went on, all the celebration of the feast days, the entire expression of God on earth as it was presented in Judaism was bound up in this temple. Jesus says it's going, it's done. And with that would go the nation of Israel in the physical fleshly sense. That's why we get through into the New Testament epistles and we see statements like Hebrews the 9th chapter, verse 9, verse 10, where the writer talking about the ceremonialism within the temple and saying when it comes to animal sacrifices, when it comes to the various baptisms, the ablutions, the cleansing ceremonies, and the feast days, he says, it's all flesh. It's all flesh and it's going because Jesus already satisfied the righteous requirement of God on the cross. Tetelestai, he cries. Meaning, yeah, it is finished, or, oh, the debt has been paid. Good, good, good. Exactly, the debt is paid. Well, if the debt is paid, and all of the Jewish ceremonialisms, and all of the cleansing ceremonies, and all of that which pointed towards propitiation, which was bound up in the temple, then, I mean, you know, it's just not needed for it to go on anymore, you know. And, of course, God gave them one generation from the time of the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ and ascension. There was one generation to repent, to bring them back. And the apostles are working and working. You see it in the book of Acts. Of course, the book of Acts doesn't cover the entire 40 years, okay. And we're heading more, quicker, quicker, quicker to the end. And then Jesus in the Olivet Discourse starts saying, here's some things that are going to precede this overthrow of this temple. And then we've already seen, I'm just reviewing right now, we've already seen that Jesus' second coming coalesces with the overthrow of the temple. Jesus even says, I'm the one who's going to knock this thing down when I come back. And when I come back, in your generation, he says, that will take place. And so the apostles say to him, okay, you're going to do this, all right. What's going to be the sign of your coming to do this when heaven and earth pass away? Remember I said to you, there's only one sign. It's in a singular. It's not a plural. They don't ask Jesus, what are the signs? We even see it right here in the 13th chapter, verse 4. Tell us, when shall these things be? They ask him. And what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled? Now, according to Matthew 24, verse 3, they ask him, what shall be the sign of thy coming and the end of the age? So basically, both statements are talking about the same thing. With the demolition of the temple, the end of the Mosaic age is an absolute. See? So what's going to be the sign that the end of the Mosaic age has come? The whole Olivet Discourse is basically about pointing to that. When Jesus says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not. The heavens and the earth, which we will, Lord willing, see next week, was, of course, a reference to the temple, to the Jewish ceremonialism. Josephus says that the Jews referred to their temple and all that went on there as the heavens and the earth. I got loads of secular writings outside of extra-biblical writings that speak to that, Jewish writings in particular, That's what they call it. Moses Maimonides, a 10th century Hebrew scholar, very well known in the scholastic community, said the exact same thing and wrote vociferously about that sort of a situation. So when Jesus says the heavens and the earth will pass away temporary, what's the sign of your coming? All this stuff is going to get thrown down. The heavens and the earth pass away. See what he's doing? But what will not pass away? My words are eternal. Psalm 119, forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven. Incredible. What was settled in heaven, you're now holding in your hands. As long as, you know, it's a reasonably good translation. Nobody's messed with it too bad, you know. Okay. So, that's where we're at with all of this. Now, let's just pick up where we left off last time. He's already talked about, you're going to hear of wars, rumors of wars. He's always referring to you guys, you guys, you guys, not somebody else. But it's locked directly into this generation. And, of course, our very first introductory material, the two Sundays we spent, we just went throughout the Gospels and the Epistles, demonstrating that there is only one point of view relative to the timing of the parousia, and that's in their day, in the first century, before A.D. 70. And that by that time, by the destruction of the temple, Jesus said, with my coming, bang, that thing goes down. And that is the sign of my coming. The sign of his coming is not 6-foot Jesus, you know, in the clouds in the sky. I'll try to get you that far today if we can, but I don't want to overload you too much. He says it's not seeing Jesus in the clouds. The sign of his coming is the overthrow of the temple. That's the sign of his coming. And yet the church has missed it for so long. Why? Presuppositional thinking. All right, you already know that. He says to them, you're going to see this, you're going to see wars, rumors of wars, you're going to hear a false Christ. One nation is going to come against another nation. There's going to be a coalition of nations that start taking place. There's going to be earthquakes, and we already went through all of this, the historicity. We showed all of this happening in the first century. Verse 11, they're going to lead you up, deliver all of you up. See, whenever you see the you, that's the second person plural pronoun. All of you, I'll deliver you up. Don't meditate beforehand what all of you will speak. Neither premeditate whatever you shall be given you in that hour. That you shall speak. It is not you that speak, it's the Holy Spirit. Verse 12, now brother shall betray brother to death. The father of the son, children shall rise up against their parents, shall cause them to be put to death. You shall be hated of all men for my sake. But he that endures unto the end, see, the end of the being hated of all men for my sake. He that endured. Now, the men here in this context is talking about the Jews. The Jews here is what he's referring to. It doesn't mean, you know, men who live on the Hawaiian Islands are going to hate you. Now, that's not relative to this. What is relative is that you're going to be hated by the Jews. In fact, I even took you into Matthew 10, verse 21, which here, verse 11, 12, and 13 sounds like a parallel to that. Jesus is saying, you're going to be persecuted, but you're not going to get throughout all the cities of Israel until I come back. In other words, it's going to happen within your lifetime while you're being persecuted. And that's the tone throughout all of the New Testament in regards to the timing issue. And so he says to them in 13, there's coming an end, but the end here has to do with the end of this endurance of persecution. And then we spent a lot of time in verse 14. But when all of you shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it should not, let him that reads understand, then let him that be in Judea flee into the mountains. Real quick, what's the abomination of desolation that he's talking about? You're all saying it. You're all saying it. Very, very good. Okay, good. And how do you know that? I should probably say into the mic, because all the people in the mic, all they heard was, and I'm saying, that's right, you're all right. So you all know that the abomination of desolation, you already know where it is the Roman army surrounding Jerusalem and even coming into the Eastern Gate, remember? And what did they do when they got inside the Eastern Gate? Remember, Cestus Gallus' whole group, when they came in the spring of AD 66, what did they do? Yeah, set up their standards. What else did they do? Worshipping the emperor. And what else did they do? Yes, there was sacrifice and the burning of incense, prayers unto their gods. They had all their standards with all their different gods. That is the abomination that desolates the holy place because Jerusalem was set apart unto God, okay? The abomination. And then I asked you, well, how do you know that? Because, and Kathy just pointed out, Luke 21, verses 20 and 21, which is the exact parallel to this passage that we're studying here in Mark 13. Luke 21, 20, Luke's writing to Gentiles. He's not writing to Jews, so he's not using much Jewish-type speech or Jewish-type metaphor. Like, why doesn't he just say the temple? Why does he say the heavens and the earth? Because Matthew and Mark, they're writing to Jews, you see. Luke, he's writing to a Gentile, Theophilus. It's kind of a personal thing, a private thing, you see. Theophilus, he's a Greek. Luke doesn't spend a lot of time with a lot of heavy Jewish metaphor. If he does mention it, he interprets it for Theophilus, you see. So in the exact same context of Luke 21, he says, when you see the armies surrounding Jerusalem, know that its desolation is near. It's the exact same thing in the exact same place where Jesus in Mark 13, verse 14, says, but when you shall see the abomination of desolation, or that which makes desolate. So he says, you're going to see it. So not some other generation is going to see it. And then I took you into Daniel, the ninth chapter. We looked briefly at the 12th chapter, and I may come back to that before we get out of this today. So he says, it's spoken by Daniel the prophet. Daniel 9:27 speaks of it. Daniel 12, verses 1 through 9 speaks of it. You should probably have that down in your notes. Let him that readeth understand. Then what's to happen? Let them that be in Judea flee unto the mountains. Now those who are in Judea when this happens, he's saying. Now this is just under 40 years. Well, it's more like 36 and a half years from when Jesus first spoke this on the Mount of Olives. Okay, about 36 and a half years to go. Spring of AD 66, Cestus Gallus comes with the Roman armies. Nero has set this up. Nero has had it with these Jews and all of the trouble that they caused, all the economic problems. It went on and on and on. He says, that's it. We're not doing this anymore. There goes Cestus Gallus. They surround the place. They pretty much have the whole thing in hand. And then for some inexplicable reason, nobody knows why. There's no history for a reason. Cestus Gallus, after they've got the city, the Jews from all over the Roman Empire are there. It's Passover celebration, and the place is packed. And they've got this, they got a city. They got representatives from all over the Roman Empire. He just pulls back. And that allows for something else to take place, which we're about to see, which is the Jewish believers that were there. Jesus is going to speak of that as a sign, and he's going to tell them, get out. As soon as you see this happen, as soon as you see, he says to them, this abomination that makes desolation happen, then you get out, run, he says, to the hills. Bottom of verse 14, let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains. Watch, let him that is on the housetop, don't go down into the house, neither enter therein to take anything out of your house. And let him that is in the field not turn back again to take up his garment. I mean, if you're working up on top of the house, just leave. When you see this happen. Because God is saying, when you see this happen, I'm making a way, here's an open door. And it's almost like God reaches down, grabs everybody in Cestus Gallus's army, and just pulls them all back so that they can leave. He says, flee to the mountains. Now, what we know, according to Josephus, and according to the Roman historian Tacitus, is that they headed north to Pella. Very important. Revelation talks about that. The book of Revelation prophesies that they would head north to Pella. History tells us this. Watch this now. Woe to them, he says, in verse 17, that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. It's going to be tough on pregnant mamas and newborns with their mamas. It's going to be really hard. Woe to them, he says. He says in verse 18, but all of you pray that your flight be not in winter, because it's tougher during the winter. Pray that it doesn't happen then. You know, he's saying, enter into this. Ask the Father that it will not happen then. Very interesting. I mean, you know, yes, God is sovereign, but isn't it interesting how he uses secondary causes to bring certain things to pass? He leaves the door open where on the one hand he's sovereign and he declares He declares what's going to happen, but it's also, there's the factor that his people need to pray and enter into this. There's scripture that teaches that we can alter certain things from taking place by taking a faith step. I mean, we talked about, I mean, look at our own country. We can alter, yes, things are bad, okay? But we have a responsibility to alter what's happening by being salt and light into this issue of corruption and putrefaction within our own government and within our own country. So we need to enter into this. We need to speak the gospel. We need to speak right government. These are good things. This provides wholeness and holds back the decay that if we let go and just let it happen, you know, all it takes, like the historian said, you know, is for good men to do nothing for evil to prevail. That's all. Now, that's, we're talking political here. Now, I could say the exact same thing in regards to the subject that we're talking about right here. I could treat this like the majority of the church does, according to presuppositional thinking, and ignore all the time texts, ignore everything else that the Bible has to say about this, and just go with the creeds and stick it out there, you know. All it takes for that evil to prevail is for me and you to shut up. But this changes it. Ooh, remind me to call that guy back, honey. Some fella called yesterday, left a message on the church machine. Pastor of, I won't use the name because I don't know who's going to hear this. Is a church in Las Vegas. Pastor's got a hold of the Second Coming series. And he's asking for help with it. And he's getting ready to I'm looking at you because you heard it too. He's getting ready to teach the congregation.
I didn't get that from it. He wants to have it transcribed into writing.
Okay. Okay. So, all I got to do for evil to prevail is not help this guy. See what I'm saying? Okay, here's an opportunity. You know, I'm very careful about this because I try to stay focused on my assignment, which is you. So I don't go off much, you know. I don't want to do that. Now, I don't mind if the CDs go out, and that's fine, and the Lord's using it, but I don't want to get too involved that pulls me away. This is his responsibility. He's got to get with God on this. If he has the responsibility of pastoring these people, I don't have that responsibility. I'm not taking that responsibility. You know, and if God's leading you, then that's what I want to happen. You know, so I'm not going to come in like gangbusters kind of a routine. But there's an opportunity to sow that and to teach that, you see. All right. So he says here then, pray that your flight will not be in winter. Verse 18. Enter into prayer. Take steps. It's just like when David and that little baby was dying as a result of his adulterous affair with Bathsheba. Remember? He says, while the child was alive, I prayed, I wept, I fasted. Who knows? Maybe God will be merciful and turn that thing around. And maybe. See, you don't know. There are secondary causes that are a part of the situation. It doesn't make God less sovereign or anything like that. But we're not puppets per se. You know what I'm saying? It's not that kind of mindlessness that goes on. He calls us to intervene and pray. And if we don't pray, if we don't sow the word, if we don't get it, then he set up his kingdom sovereignly to function as long as we are obedient to do what he says to do. If you won't do it, he'll raise up somebody who will. Then he continues. I'm moving kind of quick through this. I'm surprising myself. I'll hit the brakes real soon. Verse 19. For in those days there shall be affliction, watch this, such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created unto this time, neither shall be. Now, what that isn't saying, that is not saying that what he is describing here as the time times half a time, 3.5 year overthrow, the war of the Jews, that this is like the worst tribulation. He's not saying this is the worst tribulation that will ever be on the planet. That's not what he's saying right here. He's saying relative to Israel, relative to them, context, okay, this is bad. This is going to be the worst tribulation time of any. Not so much because of the amount of people that were killed. Not so much because of the length of time. But the fact that it is the end of the nation, as prophesied by Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter, as it is the end of the age of Moses and Jewish ceremonialism, it is the, this is what makes this the exceptional high mark of flipsis, tribulation, that has ever been. In fact, if you have a King James Version, verse 19, when it says, "For in those days shall be affliction," that's thlipsis, that's tribulation, "such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created unto this time, neither shall be." Now, hold your spot right there, and keep in mind what we just read in verse 19. Slip over to Daniel with me. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, right? It's 13 books in from the end of the Old Testament. So 13 books to the left. Daniel 12, look at verse 1. Now Jesus just said, "Those days there shall be tribulation, affliction, such as was not from the beginning of the creation," and so on. In Daniel 12 and verse 1, by the time you get to the 12th chapter of Daniel, because Daniel chapters 9, 10, 11, and 12 are a single unit. It describes the history of the times of the Gentiles from Babylon through Medo-Persia to the Greek control to Rome's control. By the time you get a little better than halfway through the 11th chapter, you're into Roman historical control. That the angel Gabriel prophesied to Daniel would happen, we're about 400, 450 years prior to the time of Christ when Daniel is getting this information, okay? All right, now we're into the time of Rome. And the 12th chapter actually points towards the Olivet Discourse. In fact, the bulk of what Jesus is basing his discourse on is Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27, and Daniel 12. That's the basis for the Olivet Discourse. All right, so Daniel 12, verse 1. "And at that time," the angel says to Daniel, "shall Michael stand up," that's Michael the archangel, "that great prince which stands for the children of thy people, and there shall be," watch, "a time of trouble." This is the thlipsis. This is the tribulation that we were just reading about in Mark 13, 19. "There shall be a time of trouble," watch the wording, "such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time, thy people shall be delivered." Who is that? Who is thy people, Daniel, that shall be delivered? "Everyone that shall be found in the book. Names written in the Lamb's Book of Life before the foundation of the world." Who are those people whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life? Daniel's people. Who were Daniel's people? The Jews, the ethnic Israelites. Well, what ethnic Israelites would be written in the Lamb's Book of Life? They'd be called... Ah, you've been very well, you know, trained in all of this. All right, so it's the remnant. The remnant is the phrase for the Jewish elect, right, that we're studying in Romans, the 11th chapter. Okay, so let's keep going here. And verse 2, "And many of," watch what else is going to happen here, right, "at the time of trouble." By the way, Jeremiah 30, verse 7 calls this the time of Jacob's trouble. You just might want to write that down, Jeremiah 30, verse 7, and that entire context right there. Jeremiah talks about the same thing that the angel is sharing with Daniel right here, which Jesus is talking about as flipsis, the time of affliction that never has been and never will be again. There will not be a repeat performance of this relative to Israel like there's going to be, Jesus says, in their future within that generation of the first century. Okay, look what else is going to happen coterminously with that. Verse 2 of chapter 12 of Daniel. Everybody with me? Daniel 12, verse 2 now. "And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt." Notice the metaphorical speech. Sleep in the dust of the earth. Interpret for me. Yeah, they're dead. So those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Watch the jump in illogical thinking here. Here it is. Ready? Jump in illogical thinking. Well, clearly, those who sleep in the dust of the earth, that's talking about bodies that come out of the ground. What's wrong with that type of thinking? Sleep in the dust of the earth. Them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. What's wrong with that? Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Carbon base?
Yeah, okay, all right. You guys are like totally inflicted by me with this other stuff. But actually, and I'm not complaining, that's fine. But I'm just saying, let's do it this way. Okay, let's cross-reference for a second. John 5, don't go there, just listen to me. John 5, 28 and 29. Okay. Jesus says the time is coming when all those who are in the tombs will hear the voice of the Son of God and will come forth. Same reason why that's not talking about bodies coming out of the ground is the same reason why this is not talking about bodies coming out of the ground. Because look at verse 2. Many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Now listen to John 5, 28. They shall hear. Those who are in the tombs, the graves, will hear the voice of the Son of God. Excuse me. What's in the tombs? Yeah, dead bagangas, right? That's it. All right? Remember? I know you're sick of this, huh?
The divers can't hear you.
That's right. That's right. They can't. It's like, what? Go to the funeral parlor, get next to the cadaver. Right? There's no movement whatsoever. The person is not there. The body is there. It's the person that is raised. It is the believer's spirit that is raised. The Bible doesn't teach that their bodies come out of the ground. Never has taught such a thing. But we have presuppositionally read into that. See? Bodies are coming out of the ground. But those who sleep in the dust of the earth, Daniel 12, 2, well, it's a reference to those who have died. They shall come forth. So here's the deal. At the time of this incredible time of trouble, Jacob's trouble, great tribulation, thlipsis megas, Matthew will write in his Olivet Discourse, a great tribulation that at that time, there will also be a resurrection. In 1 Corinthians 15, verse 21, 22, 23, 1 Corinthians 15, 21 through 23, Paul says that the resurrection happens at the same time as the parousia. See, sometimes I say coterminous, because I just want you to get used to that phrase, okay? It's coterminous, or same time. So, the resurrection happens at the same time. Well, clearly, and we're going to see it in just a little bit here, if I get a move on, we're going to see it in the Olivet Discourse, where Jesus comes back in his parousia. The sign is not him coming back. The sign is the blowing away of the temple as a result of Jesus coming back, because when he comes back, that's the sign that happens. Once that happens, Daniel says, and Jesus is going to say it the same thing in just a minute, as soon as I get there, Daniel says that at that time of trouble, that's when the resurrection takes place. Now watch. Verse 3. And they that be wise, shachal in Hebrew, it means teachers, those who are learned, those who are teachers, shachal, shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they shall turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. In other words, it's evangelization of the nations post-parousia, post-second coming. In other words, verse 3 right here, a direct parallel to that is Revelation 21, verses 24 through chapter 22 of Revelation, verses 1 through 5. I'm going to give it to you again. Revelation 21, verse 24 through chapter 22, verses 1 through 5. That's what is being discussed right here. You'll look at it later. Look at what the angel says to Daniel. But you, O Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book to the time of the end. Not the end of time, but the time of the end. The end of what? The end of the age. Exactly what the disciples asked Jesus. What will be the sign of your parousia, an arrival with a consequential presence, and the end of the age. So now he says, shut up the words, seal the book, till the time of the end, many shall run to and fro, knowledge shall be increased. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood two others, one on this side of the bank of the river, this is the Hiddekel River, and the other on that side of the bank of the river, there in Babylon. And one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, watch this question now, These are two angels, obviously. How long shall it be to the end of these wonders? That means how long will it take till it's done? How long will it be to the end of these wonders? How long will it take? How long will it take for, verse 1, this time of tribulation until this resurrection in verse 2? How long will it take for these wonders to be accomplished? Watch this. It's always been here. There has never been a need for anybody past the first century, past the destruction of the temple, past the desolation of the Jewish people. There has never been a need for this thing that started in the middle of the second century, advocating a still future to us, middle of the second century. The thing has already happened by AD 70. There has never been a need for this because it's always been here in Daniel 12. Watch. How long will it take? Verse 7. And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, so he's taking a vow, and swear by him that lives forever that it shall be, this is how long it'll take, time, times, and a half. Now that's the same terminology that the angel gives Daniel in Daniel 9, verses 24 through 27. A time is understood as a year. Times, 2 years. Half a time, half a year. This is the same terminology that the Apostle John uses in Revelation 12 and verse 14 that talks about this exact same time of megas phlipsos, or great tribulation. It will be for time, times and half a time, 3.5 years, 1290 days. Now watch what the angel says right here. How long will this take? The tribulation consummating in many that sleep in the dust of the ground shall arise. Resurrection. Yes? How long? Time, times and half a time. Here we go. He's not done yet. When he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things, all of them shall be finished. What more do you need? What more do you need? Here's the issue. I've said this to you before, I'm saying it again. It's not about winning an argument. It's not about going, oh man, you know, you're blowing your chops away and wasting all of your time with this Jesus is still coming back. It's not about any of that. It's about if Jesus has come back, then Revelation 11 and other passages say that when he comes back, he brings the kingdom with him. He is here ruling and reigning. He's here. He's not in heaven, geographical location. Yes, that's a spiritual realm. But geographical location at the right hand of the Father relative to a location, okay? But Jesus said in John 14, and if I go, I'll come again and receive you unto myself, there's the harpazo, that where I am, you'll be also. Doesn't say he goes, comes and gets you, and sneaks you back to heaven. Like some, you know, spiritual supernatural kidnapping. He stays. He doesn't go. Parousia means bang. An arrival with a consequential presence. If he comes, he has to stay. He doesn't leave. He's been here since AD 70. All right. If he's been here since AD 70, he's ruling and reigning. And the promises that are laid out that we are to be about fulfilling, especially in Revelation 21 and 22, in overthrowing evil and seeing sin brought under the heel of the Father as he uses you and I to do it. If we don't believe he's back, then we don't believe his kingdom is here. And if his kingdom isn't here, we're not going to live like it's here. We're going to keep being under the heel of some false presupposition and philosophy of a devil that's still running around that's got his sights set on you and me. And how far will the kingdom advance? It will advance about as far as it has thus far in the last 2,000 years. Now, what if there had not been this change that took place in the middle of the second century by Greeks within the Christian church, not understanding the Hebraic terminology of this book, because the Jewish influence is gone now. They're either all dead since AD 70, or they're immersed into the nations, or they got shipped off to Egypt to be slaves. There's your three choices. Those are the three historical viable choices. Okay, what if then they kept looking at this and getting the influence right? I mean, even if they didn't understand the Hebraic type of metaphor, they can still read timing passages. See? But they got it into their heads, the writings of Justin Martyr, middle of the second century, see, and other writings like that, that the second coming is still in our future. Because Jesus, he's got to come back in clouds. See, they started doing this. Said he's coming back in the clouds. Well, nobody saw him in the clouds, therefore he didn't come. Well, but see what they bypassed? See what they missed? They didn't understand the type of metaphor of the Hebraic language. Heaven and earth will pass away. Well, clearly everything's going to burn up, but we're all still here. Therefore, Jesus hasn't come back. That has been the prevailing view since the middle of the second century. What if that hadn't taken place? Where would the church be at today? I guarantee you 100% a guy like Obama wouldn't be in the White House. I guarantee it. Where would we be? Well, see, this is an impact question, okay? Because I don't know. But if the church had been acting like Jesus is here and the kingdom is here and had been acting and doing the duties of Revelation 21 and 22, verses 1 through 5, and being the leaves of the tree, being the healing and restoring of the nations, there would have been no Twin Towers. There would have been no Muslim incursion. Hello? Ladies and gentlemen, virtually every form of evil in the last 2,000 years that has encroached itself upon mankind, especially the worldwide evils like Hitler and Stalin and Mao and World War I and II and so on, in all likelihood would never have taken place. Why? Because the church would have been acting like Jesus is in control and he's here and he's reigning. Instead, we're polishing the brass on a sinking ship, going, come back and get us. Jesus, come back and get us. The rapture out of here. We're sinking fast. And that makes the Father feel how? See, this is why you and I don't do it because I say it. You know, if it makes you comfortable to follow after the traditions of the church relative to this subject in creeds and confession, and you are comfortable, like I get asked this stupid question a multitudinous time, I think I'm really going to lose it one of these days. I really think I'm going to flesh out at somebody publicly. I think it's coming, you know. I feel like Richard Nixon right now. So you mean that the church has been wrong for 2,000 years? Yes, they've been stupid about this for 2,000 years. It's the power of presuppositional thinking. Look right here. Daniel 12, verse 1, verse 2 has the resurrection. Verse 7 says the events will take 3.5 years, and when the power of the holy people is scattered, it's all finished. What is so difficult? What is so difficult is that this is not what I've been taught, and I want to be a part of the crowd, and I want to be a part of the creed, which the Bible never gives any validation for whatsoever. The job of explaining the doctrine is right here. It's in the eldership of the church. That's it. That's it. Test us. Why do you think you can't just step up here and do this? Why do you think you have to have the qualifications going on and the people in the church and other elders have to test you? And elders beget elders, so to speak. And the church has to approve it, the local assembly. Why do you suppose that is? Because we are the ones whom you hold us accountable. See? That's how it works. That's the layout. The Bible knows nothing of a denomination, knows nothing of this stuff. No, all right, off the subject. There I go. All right, back to Mark 13. Let's do that. I've had people say to me, they'll listen to the CDs or they'll listen on the website, you know, and we're on Facebook now, so I'm just like, we're just totally like hip now. I don't know. And they'll say to me, I hate it when you say, well, that's another subject for another time, because they'll say, I want to know about it now. You've brought this thing up, and then you take it away from me. And I'm like, that's why I get people coming back every week, because they're like, okay. Verse 19, for in those days shall be a tribulation. Now you know what this is talking about. Such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created unto this time, neither shall be. 20, and except that the Lord had shortened, cut off those days, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, see, that's who the flesh is that would be saved. It's the elect. See it? But for the elect's sake, whom he hath chosen or elected, he hath shortened the days. Well, how long would those days be? It will be for a time, times half a time, 3.5 years. Shortened to 3.5 years for the elect's sake. Wait a minute. What elect is he talking about here? If he's talking about the overthrow of Jerusalem and then all the believers in Jerusalem flee like Jesus said to do when Cestus Gallus pulled back and they ran to Pella, God cut it short for the elect's sake. What is the name of those elect people? The remnant. Darn straight. You guys are on target. We're talking about the Jewish remnant here. Not about the Gentiles. There's no Gentile to be seen. There's no Gentile in this gospel thing here, the Olivet Discourse. It's about them. Verse 21, and then if any man shall say to all of you guys, second person plural, lo, here is Christ, or lo, he is there, don't believe that. See, now he's already covered this once before, but he's saying as things intensify, as we get to this point, you've seen the abomination of desolation, right? The Romans surrounding and coming into the eastern gate, all right? You've seen the abomination of desolation. Cestus Gallus has pulled back, flee to the mountains. So they headed north over the Mount of Olives, they headed north past the Mount of Olives to Pella. All right, so that's happening. And then he says at the very end, there's still going to be some guys thinking they're the Messiah. They still want to grab for power. See, we already seen this. Nero was putting false Christs, false Messiahs to death on the cross, like on a daily basis. He had the roads lined with these people as warnings up on crosses, dying for anybody that would try to take over. Or try to take over. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or lo, he is there, don't believe in. 22. For false Christ, false prophets shall arise, shall show signs and wonders. See, that's legitimate. Here's a real sign and a real wonder. For the purpose of, to seduce, if it were possible, even the elect. Seduce you away from what? From the person of Christ. From believing that he is coming back and there's going to be a resurrection and it's happening in the first century. They're seducing you away from that. 23, but take ye heed, all of you listen now. Behold, I have foretold all of you all these things. So, clearly then, if it wasn't going to happen to them, why the emphasis? I have told you these things. What's the point of that? So you would recognize the stuff when it begins to happen. Hello? Oh no! The apostles here are just representatives of the church at the end of time. Clearly that's it. Clearly. 24. Now watch this. Jesus says, but in the, now here's a great example of what I'm talking about. But in those days, after that tribulation, oh, what tribulation would that be referring to? And which verse was that? No, that's an open question. That's right. See Anne back there, she's like 19. 19, for in those days shall be tribulation, affliction, King James says. Slips the same word. All right, now, verse 24, but in those days after that tribulation means after the temple has been destroyed, which is the sign that Jesus came back, watch what's going to happen. In those days after that tribulation, the sun, mark it, shall be darkened. The moon, mark it, shall not give her light. And the stars, mark it, of heaven shall fall, and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. You see that right there, Burks? Right there! It says they will see the Son of Man come. What? Who can't read? Burks can't read, clearly. Well, before I make myself look incredibly foolish, let's just back up to verse 24, and we'll lean into this. But in those days after that tribulation, sun darkened, moon not give her light, stars fall from heaven. Sun, moon, stars. I have got, and I bet some of you do too, I've got volume after volume after volume after volume after volume, ad nauseum, ad vomitus, ad volumus, commentaries that are in my library, and I keep them. There's some decent things in there, you know, but why do I keep them? I don't want to unleash them on an unsuspecting world, I guess. But anyway, sun, moon, and stars that are saying, these commentaries, of course, are saying that, well, yeah, I mean, there's going to be, they go through this long, there's going to be this cosmological, physical disruption of the universe, you know, and the sun is actually going to, they go through, you'll even read articles, you know, well, the sun is losing its power. Sun's losing all of its power, you know, and man, we're getting close. And then they'll go, Jesus said this, the sun will be darkened. This is what's happening. Therefore, we're in the last days. See, I mean, sun, moon, stars. Moon shall not give her light. Stars of heaven shall fall. All started in the middle of the second century. Mm-hmm. All started in the middle of the second century. Second Clement, the writings of Justin Martyr, other writings, started to portray this futuristic view. Because they could not reconcile this language, which they didn't understand. The Greeks didn't have a handle on this. Greeks who became Christians didn't have a handle on this. They needed Jews who were Christians to be with them in regards to this. But there were very few of them. They were dying off and they were being immersed into the ones that survived. Whether believers or not believers, Jewish believers or not Jewish believers, were being immersed into the nations. They had to be if they were going to survive. See? And Talmudic Judaism was having to take off. So those who were actual of the lineage, unbelieving Jews, non-remnant Jews, were moving into Talmudic expression, which is what we have today. It's not true biblical Judaism. It's Talmudism. Another subject, another time. Sorry, I'm saying that to you again. Now you're frustrated. I don't know. Come to Messiah. I don't know. I told some guy that the other day. You know, he was like asking me for, he writes me. So it's a local guy. He says, can you just, I see this. I get this stuff all the time. I only share it with you occasionally. He says, I see it. You know, how do I go about, you know, he says, without having to like go to a school, how do I go about getting the understanding of this language and this background and how to do Bible? And this is, and I said, you can't bypass the seminary issue. I know we make jokes about it, the cemetery, you know, stuff like that. Okay, yeah, there's boneheaded stuff. But the frank fact of the matter is, are you going to take your child to a guy who's never been to medical school? Well, this is much more important than that. Oh, this is much more important. This has eternal consequences. The physician, say, I almost called him the wrong name, didn't I? The physician, you know, is like, he's just dealing with your body for now. But I'm dealing with eternity. I'm dealing with full consciousness ramification past this life. Hey, that's a pretty good statement. Somebody write that down. Full consciousness ramification. Somebody needs to write it down because I'm going to forget it. Because I don't remember this stuff. I have people come up to me, what did you say? I don't know. You got to listen to the thing. I don't know. All right. So he says to me, you know, how do I get, I said, you can't bypass the school thing. That's why that's set up to give you that. Either that or you need to start coming to Messiah. It's amazing. I've said that twice in the last couple of weeks to people, and I never hear from these people anymore. They don't want to leave their thing, you know. Okay, that's none of my affair. If God leads you here, praise the Lord. If he doesn't, praise the Lord too, you know. It's okay. Now, would I prefer it that way? Yeah, sure. I want to infect as many people as I can. Yeah. Sooner or later, we'll be back on the radio. We'll be doing that. We'll be the bane of the community again. You know? Sun, moon, stars. What do you suppose that means? Let's start in Genesis 37. It's probably as far as I'm going to get today. Genesis 37. Man, I'm bringing you right up to coming in the clouds, aren't I? We're like right on the cusp. The temple's about to go bye-bye because I'm bringing you to the second coming. Genesis, the 37th chapter. Now, this is not quite the first place this phrase, sun, moon, and stars, shows up. I'm going to take you to the first place, but I want you to see the one incident that flipped the switch on the understanding of the Jewish understanding in the Old and New Testament that the term sun, moon, and stars refers to what? Refers to who? Sun, moon, and stars is a Old New Testament reference to who? Okay, that's perfectly fine. I'm going to give it to you now. No, seriously, that's okay. I know I've said it to you before, but it's been a long time, so it's cool. All right, Genesis 37, let's find out what Jesus means when he says the sun will be darkened, the moon turned to blood, the stars falling. Well, clearly this is some sort of physiological, cosmological conflagration of all time. Is that what this is? What's the subject? Judaism is going away. That's the subject, right? Okay. Genesis 37. Here comes Joseph having one of his dreams. And he says it to his dad and to his mom and, you know, to the brothers. He says, verse 9, chapter 37 of Genesis, and he dreamed yet another dream and told it to his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more, because he had one once before. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance unto me. They bowed to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. Now watch what father has to say about the sun, moon, and the stars. He gives the interpretation right here. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brethren, let's see, I would be sun, mom would be moon, brethren would be, yeah, the 11 stars. Indeed, come to bow down ourselves to thee on the earth. From that point, that principle, that metaphor for the nation of Israel, sun, moon, and stars, it was born at that point, and it is used consistently throughout the Old Testament to refer to the nation of Israel. Now, Jesus has been stressing to us that these things are signs, right? There will be one sign, he says in particular, that's the sign of my coming is the passing away of the heavens and the earth, he says. Now go to Genesis 1 and look at verse 14, I believe it is. Genesis 1, yeah, verse 14. Let's look at the fourth day of creation concerning sun, moon, and stars and what God has to say about the function of sun, moon, and stars. Genesis 1, verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven. That's the space, right? Let there be lights. I wonder what those lights are. Firmament of the heaven. To divide the day from the night. Go down to verse 15. Let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven, give light upon the earth, and it was so. 16. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day. What's that? Yeah. And the lesser light, moon, to rule the night. And he made the stars also. Let's see. So we've got sun, moon, and stars, yes? All right, back to 14. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night. Let them be for signs. Sun, moon, and stars are signs. That's part of their function. But then he also says, seasons, days and years. In other words, the calendar is born on the fourth day. Calendar is born on the fourth. Time and the ability to measure time starts to happen on the fourth day of creation. But notice that the sun, moon, and stars are for signs. Interesting. Okay, book of Joel, all the way clear to the back. Joel, Amos, Obadiah. So Hosea, Joel, Amos, Daniel, Hosea, Joel. Clear back. Second chapter. Look at verse 10 with me. Hosea, Joel, Amos. If you know where Daniel is, go to the right, two books. Okay? Joel 2, chapter 2. Now, the book of Joel, the first half of the book of Joel is dealing with the coming of Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian army. About 536, BC, for the initial overthrow and the carrying away of the people into Babylon. The second half of Joel deals with the day of Pentecost and the coming of the Roman armies to destroy the temple. Look at the terminology now. Joel 2, verse 10. The earth shall quake before them. The heavens shall tremble. You see it? Heavens and earth. Earth shall quake, heaven shall tremble. In other words, that old covenant is going to shake to its falling point. The sun, the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining, sun, moon, stars, and the Lord shall utter his voice before his great army, for his camp is very great, for he is strong that executes his word, for the day of the Lord is great, terrible, who can abide it? That's talking about the coming of Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian army. It's going to affect the covenant, and it's going to cause the sun, moon, and the stars to go dark and withdraw their shining. What does that mean? They're going, yeah, exactly. They're going into captivity. Who went into captivity? Israel went into captivity. The southern kingdom in particular. Same book, look at verses, same chapter too, verses 28 through 31. Joel 2, 28 through 31, more of this stuff. All right, now you'll recognize this right away because on the day of Pentecost, Acts chapter 2, Peter quotes from this and he says, this is that. This is being fulfilled right now, Peter says, in the first century. And it shall come to pass, verse 28 of chapter 2, shall come to pass, pour out my spirit on all flesh, your sons, your daughters, prophesy, your old men dream dreams, young men see visions. Also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out of my spirit and I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood, fire, pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, the moon into blood, before the great terrible day of the Lord come. Oh, excuse me, what did Jesus just say? The sun will go dark, Mark 13. The moon will be turned to blood. Oh my gosh, it's almost as if Jesus is quoting. What's up with that? What is up with that? Remember? Peter, in Acts chapter 2, quotes from this exact passage. And he says this, the sun will be turned to darkness, the moon into blood, for the great and terrible day of the Lord shall come. He quotes this. He says, this is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel in the last days, verifying that it was the last days they were living in, and that the sun and the moon turn to darkness, turn to blood. Jesus says, we just read it, Mark 13, the sun will be turned dark, moon to blood, stars withdraw their shining. We'll talk about the stars in just a second. Before the terrible day of the Lord shall come. Amos, very next book, Amos, 8th chapter. I can't show you everything, I really don't have time, so I'm just going to give a representative amount. 8th chapter, we're talking about how the sun, moon, and the stars represents the nation of Israel in the Old Testament, and Jesus uses the exact same metaphor to refer to Israel again. And so do the other boys. So does Peter, for instance. Amos, the 8th chapter, look at verse 7. And the Lord has sworn by the excellency of Jacob, surely I will never forget any of their works. Shall not the land tremble for this, and everyone mourn that dwells therein? It shall rise up wholly as a flood. It shall be cast out and drowned as by the flood of Egypt. And it shall come to pass in that day, says the Lord God, that I will cause the sun to go down at noon. I will darken the earth in the clear day. That is, I will turn your feasts into mourning. What feast would that be? Well, there were seven prominent ones, but 10 altogether. The feasts of Israel. I will cause your sun to go down at noon, darken the earth in the clear day. What does he mean by that? I'm stopping these feasts because you're going into captivity, he's saying to them. I will turn all your songs into lamentation. I will bring up sackcloth upon all the loins, baldness upon every head. I will make it as the morning of an only son, the end thereof, as a bitter day. One more. I'll just give you one of these. Revelation 12. Revelation, the 12th chapter. Look at verse 1. Well, I feel like I haven't covered very much today. Carrie tells me about what she's learned on the way home, you know, every Wednesday and Sundays. And I'm just like, really, honey? I don't remember any of that. But I, you know. Revelation 12, and there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. So we got sun, moon, and stars. See how easy it is to interpret this now? See, all I had to do was take you through these passages. Genesis 37, right? Genesis, the first chapter. Sun, moon, stars are for signs. And then Joel. And then Amos. There's other places. And I could take you right over. And now there's no guesswork here. What is this woman? This woman, I will tell you in the context. I don't have time to go through the whole thing. It's the remnant right here. It's the faithful Israelites. And through these faithful Israelites is born Messiah into this world. But the woman is standing upon, in other words, sun, moon, and stars, that's her support. She's Jewish. She is Israel, you see. But she is the remnant. That's the context here as this is going. This is not something odd. This is not some weird thing. This is not New York is you know, Babylon. This is not, is Obama the Antichrist? That's just stupid. No, that's just stupid. This is ignorant, right? Back to Mark 13. And the stars of heaven, verse 25, shall fall, and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. I'll detail this next time. I'll just stop right here. Remember when the angel said to Daniel, when the power of the holy people is shattered, all this stuff is done. It'll all have come to pass. Jesus is thinking about that as he says, the stars of heaven shall fall, and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. There's a direct parallel between that Daniel 12, verse 7 passage and what Jesus is saying right here. And with that, or I should say because of that, the reason this is happening is because of what's happening in the very next verse, that they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven. Okay, so we're going to put the comma right there. And then, Lord willing, I'll pray. I don't know yet. We'll either be back at this next Sunday or we'll be finishing up Romans, the 11th chapter. Either way, do you see how that Romans 11 fits with this Olivet Discourse thing? Isn't that something? See? The whole Bible is that way. The whole thing fits together. It all coalesces, you know? But it's not easy getting there, is it? It's not easy. It takes time. Sometimes it takes years. We've been at this a long time. And I love it when it starts to begin to gel and I start seeing it. And then, of course, I want to share it with you, you know. So pray that I'm not missing it because in my excitement, I'm like, hey, look, blah, 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 in the blah, blah, you know. So I want to be careful here. But it takes time for all this stuff to gel. It all intersperses. All of it does. But you got to consider it all. You got to look at it all, you know. You know, one of your number one assignments in this church, just being a part of this church, is you don't let people interpret the Bible piecemeal. A scripture here, a passage there, because right away, that's like the red flag siren thing going off. You're leaving context, and context is king. You may not understand Greek and Hebrew, but if you're watching your context, you're going to be able to interpret a good 95% of this solid. I promise you. There's things you miss because you don't know the language, but you're not going to get it wrong. You see what I'm saying? You'll divide it right. Context.